Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. We're bringing another episode here to you with some good information from one of our regular experts on the show, kind of coming in from a little bit different angle, and we're looking forward to that. Before we get to that, though, we have to bring in the number one regular on the show, Sam. You are as regular as they get. Is that a good thing to say?
Well, it is. My GI system works fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, it's crazy. It's going to be crazy for a while. You know, we're going to kind of divert a little bit from the whole COVID-19 thing specifically, because we've, you know, as new information comes in, we'll get it out there. But, you know, we have a lot of people who wear more than one hat, and Becky DePodwin is one of those people, because she has a master's degree in communication and crisis management. And she threw something up on Twitter about some of the things she learned in that process, and I was quite taken with some of these. So I want to throw some of these out and have her comment on them, and then see what Joe and Jamie think. Is good?
I think that's great. So jump in.
All right. So we already, everybody knows who we are. So Becky, here's the first one. For, you know, I kind of divided this up into topic areas. And first it was talking about what is a crisis. Of course, that's all on an individual level in some cases. But you said a crisis is a fluid and dynamic site of affairs containing equal parts danger and opportunity. It's a turning point for better or worse. The Chinese have a word for this, YG. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Becky.
Yeah, I know we said we weren't going to totally relate this to COVID-19, but it's actually a really perfect demonstration of this. We've seen, obviously, that's at the forefront is the danger associated with a virus, the people who are very sick and dying. We've also seen a lot of change come about, whether it's at the federal level and the government aid, or whether it's everybody suddenly able to work from home, even though our bosses may previously said, hey, you know, telework isn't an option, but oh, look, it actually is an option. And it's becoming very, very obvious, and has been for probably at least a week or two, that things are not going to be the same after this. And that can be said for any crisis. If you look back in history, the world dramatically changed after 9/11. It's another great example. After the 2008 stock market collapse, which may not be as stark of a disaster, so to speak. But they crises, for better or worse, are a turning point. Things are not normal, or rather a new normal is defined. And so a lot of how we come through a crisis is really dependent on a number of things, whether it's an individual or an organization, or even, you know, as a broader sense, a country, a government, people as a whole. How we view things, how we talk about things, which has been very much changed with the advent of social media. I know it's been difficult for even me, who loves social media, to be on it so much, because it's just this constant influx of information, and it's hard to understand and know what exactly is accurate, what's relevant, what's not. Which is why it's great to hear from people like Joe, who are getting information directly from a source. But it's understanding that as the crisis is ongoing, everything is fluid, everything is changing. What was a fact an hour ago may not be a fact in 2 hours from now, on any number of different aspects of the crisis.
Ooh, well said. So Joe, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's the dynamics of change, right? We're clearly going to have a pretty substantial economic impact from all the stuff that's going on, and things are going to be changing there as well. I view crises in two interesting ways. One is they're obviously tremendous challenges, but they're also tremendous opportunities. I've gotten some things that I've been working on for 2 years enacted in 2 weeks. And so it's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, you know? So that's just, I think, part of the dynamics of change is that it comes in waves sometimes, and it sometimes requires the catalyst of a major event like this to do it.
Yes, sad but true. Well, another part of that definition is a crisis is made distinctive from other unfortunate circumstances by three things: surprise, threat, and short response time. So two of those are rather obvious, Becky, but what about short response time? Can you clarify that?
Yeah, so that's interesting because that's obviously not quite the case with what's happening here. This is a very lengthy, ongoing disaster. But I think in the context of what that book was talking about was more from an organizational standpoint. So I'm going to relate this to like a PR crisis. Say your company does something bad or somebody in your company is in the news for a very negative reason. A, you're probably caught off guard by it. B, it poses a threat to your brand, the reputation, the image that you've tried to portray to the country. A good example of this is Johnson & Johnson. Back in, I can't remember exactly the year, maybe the 50s or the 60s, people were actually dying from, I want to say ibuprofen or Advil that was being sold by Johnson & Johnson, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. So their response, well, it was in a very short time, they took all of that merchandise off the shelves everywhere. So obviously a huge significant financial cost to them. And eventually they discovered that someone was actually sticking a needle in and injecting poison into the bottles. So obviously it was no fault of Johnson & Johnson. It was nothing, their product was not faulty in any way. But because of their quick response to the threat, even though it caught them off guard, they were able to stop what could have become a major crisis. And they were able to handle it in a way that saved, you know, ultimately saved their reputation and their brand as a company because they took action and made sure that no one else was harmed. So when you're faced with that type of crisis, at least when it comes to at that smaller of a scale, obviously what we're dealing with now is a bit different. How you respond and the time in which you respond is very critical.
Wow, that's perfectly clear now. That was Jamie's commenting. That was from the 80s. But Jamie, you're doing some things on social media that I think are kind of neat. You want to throw that out?
Well, and I made a comment earlier in the chat room while we were talking on the last point, you know, about crises. One of the things I've tried to do is just keep people, because there is so much information floating around on social media, so much negativity, so much worry, that I've been posting a daily dad joke. And I did it, you know, just kind of like I've got to just be positive. I've got so much negative stuff I'm reading because I have to, because of this show and because of other things I'm doing. And I just, for my own sanity, I deal with things through humor. A lot of us in EMS and emergency services do have a little bit of a dark humor side to us. But I just threw out dad jokes. I mean, really bad puns. And I started doing that a couple weeks ago, and there are people now that wake up in the morning and go to my Facebook page just to see the dad joke I posted, just so they can groan at it in the comments. And I've noticed that. And so, you know, it's having the positive effect that it needs to have, which is centering people, I think, is what I'm trying to do. And Becky, I don't know if there's any kind of, you know, word for that or anything, but it seems to be working because a lot of people seem to be using that as a way to get their day started.
So I guess that wasn't something that I, you know, was directly related to the crisis communication standpoint, but from a coping with the crisis from an emotional well-being standpoint, humor is absolutely necessary. My Twitter, honestly, right now has been cat pictures and funny things, positive things. Like I haven't been on much because it's just too information overload right now. But what I have been posting hasn't really been related to anything negative because there's only too much of that. And I think on a very individual level, coping with a crisis, coping with something that is life-changing and will forever alter what we perceive as normal, having that humor, having something that brings us joy, whatever it may be. And Jamie, your dad jokes are terrible, and I love them. It's helpful, and we need that right now.
Well, I'm putting up silly cat videos and stuff, so that's about the extent of my social media. But here's one I really like, Becky. Crisis and risk are inherently interconnected. The difference is that while crisis can be avoided, risk is a natural part of life. But poor risk communication can cause a crisis. Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, yes. This is a good one. So I don't know if the listeners on the show know, but I live in State College, Pennsylvania. I did not go to Penn State, but that university is located here. The example in the book that I read, it's actually referenced in several books on crisis communication, is the scandal related to Joe Paterno and the sexual abuse that went on in the football program while he was head coach. Sandusky was the one doing the abuse. There's questions on whether or not Joe Paterno knew. Basically, what it boils down to is that whole thing, obviously a very awful situation, did not need to become a crisis for Penn State. It was handled incredibly poorly from a crisis communication standpoint. There were crisis communicators. I think Stephen Fink actually offered his service to Penn State to manage the communication of what was going on, and they declined. And what ended up happening is that, I don't know how familiar you guys are with the story. I'm familiar because I live here now, and my husband went to Penn State, and it's just sort of ingrained in everything you hear in this town. Obviously everything that was going on was awful and tragic, and it was going to become a story anyway, but Penn State handled it so poorly and that they fired Joe Paterno in the middle of the night via courier, essentially. My facts may be a little fuzzy there because I'm not super familiar with the whole story. But the act of how they went about doing that and how they handled the crisis from like a very public-facing standpoint, because Joe Paterno was a very beloved coach, very well-known, was bad. It was very, very bad. It triggered immense outrage among the alumni, the current students, everybody who cared about Penn State. And again, it wasn't clear at that point in time that he had any knowledge of what was going on. And so that became, in and of itself, an integral part of the crisis, what it never needed to be. And so it changed what was already a pretty bad situation and just expanded it to be what ultimately became a huge PR nightmare for the university, because they handled the crisis so poorly and didn't understand the ripple effects of what, you know, one particular action would have and how people would perceive it. And so that's where that the risk communication can cause a crisis. This is obviously a very tangential, not exactly related to like a disaster or anything that in the context that we usually speak about. But conveying something in a way that's not completely clear, or conveying it in a way that it didn't need to be conveyed, can turn something into a much bigger crisis than it ever needed to be. I have other examples I can give, but I'll stop there.
Well, it's a good segue into some of your points on organizational crisis. And I love the end of this. Then we'll throw it to Joe because he's got some thoughts coming. But it basically says organizational crises are composed of these key components: unexpected, non-routine, produces uncertainty, creates opportunity, poses a threat to image, reputation, or high priority goals. And I love this. Crisis management deals with managing reality. Crisis communication deals with shaping perception of that crisis. Joe?
So I was listening to Becky there just a minute ago and just thinking, you know, from a disaster medicine standpoint, the messaging is always very challenging. We're certainly seeing that now, right? Where people are minimizing or ignoring the messaging on social distancing for COVID-19. And I think a lot of that is a failure of our ability to adequately communicate what it is we're trying to accomplish. We've gotten a little better at it, especially at, you know, the national level, where the message was very muddy and confusing and et cetera. And you know, it is indeed all about people's perception, and it is very much about there is science to that, and it is incredibly impactful science. And I hope people appreciate that those skills are vitally necessary to efficiently and appropriately transmit the message to generate the effect you wish to have.
Very good. Jamie, your thoughts?
Well, and we've seen this time and again, and we've talked about it, and maybe Becky can relate something to this as well, is the we talk all the time about messaging regarding things like hurricanes coming towards the coast and the cone of uncertainty, and how do we transmit what that actually means to a public who's trying to decide whether or not to heed an evacuation warning. It's how that information has been transmitted changes what people's perceptions of their risk factors are. Becky, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we've found, and a social scientist could speak to this a lot more, and we should certainly have one on at some point. Oftentimes people don't appreciate the risk that they're facing until they have experienced it for themselves. The example I'll give is Hurricanes Irene and Sandy. Irene was the year before Sandy. And a lot of people on the Jersey Shore went through Irene and came out the other end just fine. And so when Sandy rolled around a year later, they had this idea in their head that, oh, well, the risk isn't that high here because I've already gone through a hurricane, so I don't need to evacuate for Sandy. And that didn't work out very well for a lot of people because Sandy was a much different storm. You talk to the same people now and they say, I would never stay on the shore again after going through Hurricane Sandy. And they will quote, and they'll say specifically like how different it was from Irene to Sandy and how they thought they weren't facing any risk until they really realized it for themselves. Another example is the Saffir-Simpson scale, which we've talked about before, which only takes into account wind. And so we say, oh, you know, you have a Cat 2 heading towards the coast, and people are like, oh, whatever, it's just a Cat 2. But meanwhile, the storm surge is going to be incredible, and it's going to inundate wherever that region is, but we can't necessarily convey that by simply saying it's going to be a Cat 2, because, again, that's only wind. So conveying risk and helping people understand what the risk they're facing and how that risk might end up turning into a crisis is very complex when it comes to meteorology, particularly with multifaceted storms like hurricanes.
Yeah, I think that was a similar situation in 2005 too, with our bad storm of the century, Katrina. So here's, you know, that's kind of, again, leads into some of these thoughts. As far as leadership and good crisis communication need to reduce the uncertainty that they're certainly going to have. There's many types of leadership and leaders that must adapt their leadership style during a crisis. This is called contingency leadership. Leadership is crucial during a crisis, and a good leader reflects and strengthens the organizational culture. They serve as moral guides and promote ethical conduct. They should be visible, open, and honest. Becky, you want to come in on that one?
Oh, yes, but no.
Well, it goes on to say, too, that it's the leader that needs to set the tone. If he has a tone of fear, then everybody's going to fear. You know, it's like your dad. Your dad is there to make you feel safe, but if your dad's wigging out, you're going, oh, man, this must be really bad. We saw a lot of that after, Ground Zero. But they should work to make their employees feel safe without fearing the leader, if that makes any sense. No. Joe, why don't you give Becky a minute to think about that? And Joe, what are your thoughts on it?
on sort of the perception of the leader there, you mean?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about our discussion with Chris Pretzman the other day, and we have learned since that he is creating a really nice process for taking care of his first responders, and we're going to have him back on to talk about that. But that's the kind of leader that, you know, he's doing his best at his level in that EMS system to provide safety and security and rest and all of these things for his providers. And I'm sure they have a lot of respect for him because of that. They're being taken care of like dad. Does that make sense?
Well, that's correct. And I mean, I think a lot of that is the difference between a reactive leader and a proactive leader, right? The good leaders are not in a reactive mode. They've thought about those things. They've tried to prepare for those things. They put systems and infrastructure in place to be able to handle their absence or a change in, you know, whatever, so that they show that they're trying to think ahead. That's what the leader's job is to think ahead and look for stuff that's coming up. So, you know, for many folks, they think being in charge means I get to sit back and everybody does all the work and I just tell them what to do. And that's not really what the job of the leader is. So, you know, I think that is very much in many cases about a failure of leadership.
Yes. Jamie, you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that, in especially in disaster and crisis situations, you know, there will be errors in judgment that happen or mistakes that are made, but it is the response to those mistakes that often define leadership, for me at least. You know, the ownership of, well, there was an error made and here's what we're going to do to fix it. You know, that kind of response brings it from, has a reaction phase to it, but then brings it back into, we're going to be proactive and make sure that doesn't happen again. And I think that that's, you know, that's the type of leadership that we've seen, you know, all along different events that we've seen happen throughout the years, you know, from Ground Zero to what Joe experienced at the Pentagon during 9/11 to other events we've talked about here on this show many times, where leadership came in and changed the way resources were allocated. And some of that happens after the event, before the next event. So leadership is an ongoing process too.
I agree. And like I said, I think respect, I'm reflecting back on being a paramedic supervisor, especially when there was some kind of crisis. Of course, I also did critical incident stress management. But, you know, it mentions here that a good crisis communicator, which any supervisor or manager is, must have compassion, concern, and empathy. People shouldn't be afraid to go to you and lay out what their concerns are. And listening is an important part of the process. You're not going to know how your field is going to reacting. The day of 9/11, I was going on duty. And my first concern was, let's get some supervisors out there to talk to the field and see how they're feeling about this. God knows. And then you adjust your crisis response. Becky, you want to go with that now?
Yeah, I think you guys have hit on this. A good leader shows compassion and empathy, and they try to understand what exactly the people who are looking to them for guidance may be feeling in times of significant uncertainty, which is certainly where we're at right now. They should serve as a moral guide and promote ethical conduct. And along with that comes being honest about what's going on. Some of the three tenets, six actually, but of crisis communication are be first, be right, and be credible. And it's interesting that be first is the first one, because you would think that be right would be. But the be first is the number one, because people need to hear from someone in charge, in control, in power. They need to be assured that someone is handling the crisis on what's going on, and that someone who knows what they're doing is going to take care of things. And when that doesn't occur, it can add to the crisis and make it that much worse. Again, that comes back to that perception and how people perceive how something may be unfolded can actually impact their actions. We may have seen this happening when people were panic buying toilet paper 2 weeks ago. Maybe the message wasn't being communicated in a way that helped people understand what the true threat was, which they turned and did things that made sense to them, which was to buy toilet paper, because there wasn't great messaging occurring at that point in time when it comes to the particular situation of COVID-19.
Yeah, actually, that segues into our last question, which has to do with social media. And like you mentioned, Becky, that's something that you know very well. But it talks about it being a key in identifying potential crisis ahead of time, as well as a way to reach stakeholders in a quick and direct way. Social media should be considered part of any crisis communications response. So, obviously, that's a good thing and a bad thing, and I agree with what you said earlier. I don't really spend a lot of time because I don't want to hear the ranters and the hoarders and the people in a negative place. I love the one stuff people are putting out to acknowledge first responders and hospital folks and even the clerk at the grocery store, you know. But once I start getting bogged down with that other stuff, I just turn it off. I don't want to hear it. So whatever message they have isn't going to get to me. So, Joe, what are your thoughts? I know you got to jump off in a minute.
Well, I think the summary statements here have been pretty accurate. It is indeed all about the perception and how people manage that and what people are looking for. And I think some leaders get that and some don't. In many cases, the chaos that ensues is a direct result of their inability to do the things that Becky was talking about. Get a clear message, get it out there first, be credible, be consistent, admit when you don't know, but you'll find out, et cetera.
That's a good wrap on that. You know, I would love to have asked any number of those people why they need all that toilet paper, and I doubt that any of them would have had a good answer. So no one else can get it? That's not a good answer. So, Becky, any wrap-up thoughts on this?
Ooh. I think just I would ask that people just observe what's going on, whether it's a crisis as large and global scale as COVID-19 or something within your own organization. Just watch how your leaders handle it and learn from that, whether it's good or whether it's bad. I think you'll be able to pick up pretty quickly whether or not they have compassion and empathy, whether or not they are trying desperately to simply protect a brand, or whether they're more concerned about their people. And there are a lot of different types of leaders, and there are leaders who are able to adapt their leadership style during a crisis, and there are leaders who are not able to do that. I think for people who are, I guess in my position at least, it's really just a learning opportunity to sit back and observe and see and take bits and pieces and apply them to your own leadership style when and if that may arise.
Very well said. Well, that's kind of my final thought. Now is your time as a supervisor or manager to shine. And the shine you put on it now is going to give you respect or have you respected by your field for a long time to come, certainly into the next crisis. So it's certainly worth putting forth the effort. Jamie?
Yeah, and I'll just wrap up and kind of jump in to get Joe out of here in good time. I think that one of the things that people look for in responders, in disaster responders specifically, is that type of leadership, that type of credible reassurance, being there in a timely fashion, showing up, showing knowledge, showing the ability to take a rough situation into hand and make some kind of calm out of the chaos. And that's one of the things I think Joe brings to the table with Paragon Medical Education Group, both here on the show and in the training evolutions and drills that you and your team put together, Joe, is teaching people to be leaders when they arrive at the scene. because that's what our public looks for from us. When everything falls apart around them, they want somebody to come in there and give them some semblance of calm, of reassurance, of take control. And that's why you have that type of experiential training, so that people get that kind of, you know, education under fire, so that when they get to that high tension, high stress emergency situation, they're ready to go.
Well, you said that beautifully, Jamie. You know, people need a sense of purpose, and they need to know how they can help. The vast majority of people want to do the right thing, and they want to help. They just need structure to be able to do that. They're not sure what it is they need to do. So we do incorporate that, I think, very deeply in all of our training, because that is a rarely spoken of, rarely identified, incredibly important part of crisis management and disaster management in general. So we hope that folks will reach out to us on the web at ParagonMedicalGroup.com or on our Facebook page, Paragon Medical Group, or through the Disaster Podcast, so that we can help you to be ready for the next COVID or earthquake or whatever's coming around the corner.
Thanks. And let's hope there's not a next COVID around the corner too close, because this is already a lot. Anyway, thanks, Joe, for that. Thanks for your continued support of the Disaster Podcast. And everybody, I urge you to reach out to them. You know, the current situation is not going to go on forever. We're going to come out the other end, and we're going to need to get our training resources back in play. And I think Paragon Medical Education Group is a great way to do that. Becky, where can folks catch up with you if they want to find out more what you're doing, or maybe some of the cat pics you've been posting lately?
Definitely on Twitter, at WX_Bex. You can search me, Becky DePodwin, and always hanging out on the Disaster Podcast Facebook page, and a little more on LinkedIn nowadays too. Again, Becky DePodwin, on any of the socials.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you for putting this episode together on crisis management and communication. I think it's an important topic to touch on in the midst of everything that's going on. So thank you. Sam, where can folks find you?
In my house, Jamie. Where else? But I just wanted to throw out that I just happened to catch the tweet that Becky put up that gave me this topic idea, and all of the things she put on there. So watching Becky on social media, I get a lot of good show ideas, and she throws out such really good stuff. So that's where it all came from tonight. But other than being in my house, I shall probably be on my computer on social media under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. And I'm glad to hear we're getting more people that feel we're a good, honest resource for information in the Facebook group, as well as disasterpodcast.com. Jamie?
Yep, and you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations out there. Just friend or follow me there, especially over at the Disaster Podcast Facebook group. Search for Disaster Podcast and join the group. We'd love to have you there. And, of course, at disasterpodcast.com, where you can find all the episodes of this podcast. Search for any episode in the past. We've got them all there. So if you've heard we've covered a topic, we probably have, and you can look it up by searching for your keywords right there on the front page. That's it for me. Sam, this has been a good episode. Thanks for pulling this together.
Well, we can thank Becky for that. She had the idea. And while you're sitting at home, hey, listen to some of the podcasts. We've had good ones for pushing 8 years now. But I guess, Jamie, the only thing we can say about this topic is disaster management is not our everyday management.